A Little Dinner at Timmins by William Macapus Thackeray. I, Mr. and Mrs. Fitzroy Timmins, live in Lilliput Street, that neat little street which runs at right angles with the park and Brobdingnag Gardens. It is a very genteel neighborhood, and I need not say they are of a good family. Especially Mrs. Timmins, as her mama is always telling Mr. T. They are Suffolk people, and distantly related to the Right Honorable the Earl of Bungay. Besides his house in Lilliput Street, Mr. Timmins has chambers in Fig Tree Court, Temple, and goes the Northern Circuit. The other day, when there was a slight difference about the payment of fees between the great parliamentary council and the solicitors, Stoke and Pogers, of Great George Street, sent the papers of the Low Foyle and Low Corrib Junction Railway to Mr. Fitzroy Timmins, who was so elated that he instantly purchased a couple of looking glasses for his drawing rooms. The front room is 16 by 12 and the back, a tight but elegant apartment, 10 feet 6 by 8 feet. 4. A coral for the baby, 2 new dresses for Mrs. Timmins, and a little rosewood desk at the Pantechnicon, for which Rosa had long been sighing, with crumpled legs, emerald green and gold morocco top, and drawers all over. Mrs. Timmins is a very pretty poetess. Her eyes to a faded tulip and her lane of Plinlimmon appeared in one of last year's keepsakes, and Fitzroy, as he impressed a kiss on the snowy forehead of his bride, pointed out to her, in one of the innumerable pockets of the desk, an elegant ruby-tipped pen, and 6 charming little gilt blank books, marked Y books, which Mrs. Fitzroy might fill, he said. He is an Oxford man, and very polite, if the delightful productions of her muse. Besides these books, there was pink paper, paper with crimson edges, lace paper, all stamped with R.F. T. Rosa Fitzroy Timmins, and the hand and battle axe, the crest of the Timminses, and born at Ascalon by Roldus de Timmins, a crusader, who is now buried in the Temple Church, next to Sergeant Snooks, and yellow, pink, light blue and other scented sealing waxes, at the service of Rosa, when she chose to correspond with her friends. Rosa, you may be sure, jumped with joy at the sight of this sweet present, called her Charles, his first name is Samuel, but they have sunk, that, the best of men, embraced him a great number of times, to the edification of her buttony little page, who stood at the landing, and as soon as he was gone to chambers, took the new pen and a sweet sheet of paper, and began to compose a poem. What shall it be about, was naturally her first thought. That should be a young mother's first inspiration. Her child lay on the sofa asleep before her, and she began in her neatest hand, Eines, on my son Bungay de Bracy Gashley Timmins, aged 10 months, Tuesday. How beautiful thou seemest, my boy, my precious one, my rosy babe. Kind angels hover round thee, as thou dreamest. Soft lashes hide thy bodious azure eye which gleamest. Gleamest? Thine eye which gleamest? Is that grammar? Thought Rosa, who had puzzled her little brains for some time with this absurd question, when the baby woke. Then the cook came up to ask about dinner. Then Mrs. Fundy slipped over from number 27, they are opposite neighbors, and made an acquaintance through Mrs. Fundy's macaw, and a thousand things happened. Finally, there was no rhyme to babe except to Poosabe, against whom Major Gashley, Rosa's grandfather, had distinguished himself, and so she gave up the little poem about her de Bracy. Nevertheless, when Fitzroy returned from chambers, to take a walk with his wife in the park, as he peeped through the rich tapestry hanging which divided the two drawing rooms, he found his dear girl still seated at the desk, and writing away with her ruby pen as fast as it could scribble. What a genius that child has! He said. Why, she is a second Mrs. Norton! And advanced smiling to peep over her shoulder, and see what pretty thing Rosa was composing. It was not poetry, though, that she was writing, and Fitz read as follows. Lilliput Street, Tuesday, 22nd May. Mr. and Mr. Fitzroy Timmons request the pleasure of Sir Thomas and Lady Kickleberry's company at dinner on Wednesday, at 7:12 o'clock. My dear, exclaimed the barrister, pulling a long face. La, Fitzroy, cried the beloved of his bosom, how you do startle one. Give a dinner party with our means, said he. Ain't you making a fortune, you miser? Rosa said. 15 guineas a day is 4,500 a year, I've calculated it. And, so saying, she rose and taking hold of his whiskers, which are as fine as those of any man of his circuit, she put her mouth close up against his, and did something to his long face, which quite changed the expression of it, and which the little page heard outside the door. Our dining room won't hold 10, he said. We'll only ask 20, my love. 10 are sure to refuse in this season, when everybody is giving parties. Look, here is the list. Earl and Countess of Bungay, and Lady Barbara St. Mary's. You are dying to get a lord into the house, Timmons said. He had not altered his name in Fig Tree Court yet, and therefore I am not so affected as to call him Timmons. La, my dear, they are our cousins, and must be asked, Rosa said. Let us put down my sister and Tom Crowder, then. Blanche Crowder is really so very fat, Fitzroy, his wife said, and our rooms are so very small. Fitz laughed. Ooh, little rogue, he said, Lady Bungay weighs 2 of Blanche, even when she's not in the F fiddlesticks. Rose cried out. Octor Crowder really cannot be admitted. He makes such a noise eating his soup, that it is really quite disagreeable. And she imitated the gurgling noise performed by the doctor, while ingesting his soup, in such a funny way, that Fitz saw inviting him was out of the question. Besides, we mustn't have too many relations, Rosa went on. Mama, of course, is coming. She doesn't like to be asked in the evening, and she'll bring her silver bread basket and her candlesticks, which are very rich and handsome. And you complain of Blanche for being too stout, groaned out Timmons. Well, well, don't be in a pet, said little Rosa. He girls won't come to dinner, but will bring their music afterwards. And she went on with the list. Sir Thomas and Lady Kickleberry, too. No saying no. We must ask them, Charles. They are rich people, and any room in their house in Brobdingnag Gardens would swallow up our humble cot. But to people in our position in society they will be glad enough to come. The city people are glad to mix with the old families. Very good, says Fitz, with a sad face of assent, and Mrs. Timmons went on reading her list. Mr. and Mrs. Topham Sawyer, Belgraven Plus. Mrs. Sawyer hasn't asked you all the season. She gives herself the airs of an empress, and when one's member, you know, my dear, one must have, Rosa replied, with much dignity, as if the presence of the representative of her native place would be a protection to her dinner. And a note was written and transported by the page early next morning to the mansion of the Sawyers, in Belgraven Plus. The Topham Sawyers had just come down to breakfast. Mrs. T in her large dust-colored morning dress and Madonna front, she looks rather scraggy of a morning, but I promise you her ringlets and figure will stun you of an evening, and having read the note, the following dialogue passed. Mrs. Topham Sawyer. L, upon my word, I don't know where things will end. Mr. Sawyer, the Timmonses have asked us to dinner. Mr. Topham Sawyer. SK us to dinner. What the impudence. Mrs. Topham Sawyer. He most dangerous and insolent revolutionary principles are abroad, Mr. Sawyer, and I shall write and hint as much to these persons. Mr. Topham Sawyer. Oh, dear, Joanna. They are my constituents and we must go. Write a civil note and say we will come to their party. He resumes the perusal of the Times, apostrophe and Mrs. Topham Sawyer writes, My dear Rosa, we shall have great pleasure in joining your little party. I do not reply in the third person, as we are old friends, you know, and country neighbors. I hope your mama is well. present my kindest remembrances to her, and I hope we shall see much more of each other in the summer, when we go down to the saw pits, for going abroad is out of the question in these dreadful times. With 100 kisses to your dear little pet, Elevmere attached, .ts. She said pet, because she did not know whether Rosa's child was a girl or boy. And Mrs. Timmons was very much pleased with the kind and gracious nature of the reply to her invitation. 2. The next persons whom little Mrs. Timmons was bent upon asking were Mr. and Mrs. John Rowdy, of the firm of Stumpy, Rowdy, and Company, comma of Brobdingnag Gardens, of the Prairie, Putney, and of Lombard Street, City. Mrs. Timmons and Mrs. Rowdy had been brought up at the same school together, and there was always a little rivalry between them, from the day when they contended for the French prize at school to last week, when each had a stall at the fancy fair for the benefit of the daughters of decayed muffin men, and when Mrs. Timmons danced against Mrs. Rowdy in the scythe mazurka at the Polish ball, headed by Mrs. Hugh Slasher. Rowdy took £23 more than Timmons in the muffin transaction, for as he had possession of a kettle holder worked by the hands of our wild eye, which brought crowds to her stall, but in the mazurka Rosa conquered. As he has the prettiest little foot possible, which in a red boot and silver heel looked so lovely, that even the Chinese ambassador remarked it, whereas Mrs. Rowdy's foot is no trifle, as Lord Cornbury acknowledged, when it came down on his lordship's boot tip as they danced together amongst the scythes. These people are ruining themselves, said Mrs. John Rowdy to her husband, on receiving the pink note. It was carried round by that rogue of a Putney page in the evening, and he walked to Brobdingnag Gardens, and in the park afterwards, with a young lady who is kitchen maid at 27, and who is not more than 14 years older than little Buttons. These people are ruining themselves, said Mrs. John to her husband. Osa says as he has asked the Bungays. Bungays indeed. Timmons was always a tough hunter, said Rowdy, who had been at college with the barrister, and who, for his own part, has no more objection to a lord than you or I have, and adding, hang him, what business has he to be giving parties? Allowed Mrs. Rowdy, nevertheless, to accept Rosa's invitation. When I go to business tomorrow, I will just have a look at Mr. Fitz's account, Mr. Rowdy thought, and if it is overdrawn, as it usually is, why? The announcement of Mrs. Rowdy's brougham here put an end to this agreeable train of thought, and the banker and his lady stepped into it to join a snug little family party of 22, given by Mr. and Mrs. Second Chop at their great house on the other side of the park. Rowdy's 2 Bungays 3 ourselves and Mama 3 2 Sawyers, calculated little Rosa. General Gulpin, Rosa continued, eats a great deal, and is very stupid, but he looks well at table with his star and ribbon. Let us put him down. And she noted down Sir Thomas and Lady Gulpin, 2. Lord Castlemouldy, 1. You will make your party abominably genteel and stupid, groaned Timmons. Why don't you ask some of our old friends? Old Mrs. Portman has asked us 20 times, I am sure, within the last 2 years. And the last time we went there was pea soup for dinner, Mrs. Timmons said, with a look of ineffable scorn. Nobody can have been kinder than the Hodges have always been to us, and some sort of return we might make, I think. Return, indeed. A pretty sound it is on the staircase, to hear apostrophe Mr. and Mrs. Hodge and Miss Hodges pronounced by Billiter, who always leaves his H's out. No, no. See attorneys at your chambers, my dear, but what could the poor creatures do in our society? And so, one by one, Timmons' old friends were tried and eliminated by Mrs. Timmons, just as if he had been an Irish attorney general, and they so many Catholics on Mr. Mitchell's jury. Mrs. Fitzroy insisted that the party should be of her very best company. Funnyman, the great wit, was asked, because of his jokes, and Mrs. Butt, on whom he practices, and Poeter, who was asked. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.